those big mega farms and stuff. As long as we're healthy, our friends are healthy, and our community's healthy, we're good with that.
Using research from NMSU Science Center, the Triple Crown Blackberry, known for its large size and sweet aromatic flavor, is one of his best-selling and most profitable crops. Bustos says a business course through the university also helped him better understand the financial side of farm operations.
I took over the farm in the dirty 80s, and I just fell in love with it. I would have to make a lot of money, but sometimes that's not the goal. That's not the mission. The mission is to have them doing it.
This is Roz Brown, New Mexico News Connection.
You're listening to an end-of-year membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news, stories, and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Althea Billings and me. The producer is also me, and our engineer is Sam Bowman. Special thanks to Edwin J. Vieira, Brian Bull, Suzanne Potter, Roz Brown, and Eric Tegedoff. Our evening news director is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Eliza Yurkov. Can you believe all of our KBOO programs are made possible by support from our members? I can! KBOO is currently in our end-of-year fundraising drive, and our goal is to raise $75,000 by December 31st. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can. Go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for news in depth.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
Making contact.
I'm Amy Gastelum. This week on Making Contact, we're closing out National Adoption Month by handing the mic to Korean-American adoptees. Our millennial guests talk about how they grapple with identity being part of the largest ever international exodus of adopted children.
There's a lot kind of like loaded in that assumption of like a better life in America.
And we'll hear from a group of Korean single moms in Queens, New York, who are bucking the stigma of being unwed mothers.
In Korean culture, if who has the baby without husband, they assume her life is already ruined or, you know, embarrassing. But I don't care. Yeah.
Stay with us.
So I just got called by the midwife at the Brooklyn Birthing Center, and there is a mom in labor coming in. So right now I am packing my bag, my birth bag, to take down with me to work, and I put a stethoscope in there of my own. I also have a lapel watch that I pin into my shirt so I don't have to look at a watch. My work clothes, just a pair of scrub pants and a t-shirt. And I always make sure I take some good snacks with me because you never know when's the next time you're going to eat once you get pulled into a birth. And I think we're all set. I'm ready to go. So I'm headed out the door.
I am Lydia Doublestein, and
I currently work as a birth assistant and a doula while I am studying to be a midwife. When I'm in the room, I'm helping to facilitate this bonding. I'm helping to facilitate this breastfeeding, this aspect of my life that I have no context with beyond just my learning experience and training. The relationship that I'm fostering during this immediate postpartum time is something I never had with my adoptive mom. It's something I never had with my birth mom. It's almost like, who am I to even be in this context? Because I have no context to bring with me. It's nothing is here. Why me? And I think all adoptees have that loss of context.
All right, I'm here. Okay, so just call.
So my Korean name is Park Hyun. As far as I know, it was just kind of an arbitrary name given by the social worker. But 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago, when I initiated a search for my birth mom, the only thing that they could verify to me is to let me know that her last name was Park as well, so that we did share the same surname.
Tween, do you mind if I listen to the baby's heart rate?
I first thought about midwifery seriously as a future career the summer before my senior year of high school. I was super interested in international work, so as I looked at more international sites that were doing midwifery and training midwives in other countries around the world, they all talked about maternal mortality, and midwives are a key to addressing maternal and infant mortality. Because no woman ought to die alone, in childbirth especially. No woman should die alone giving life. And within my adoption papers, the tiny paragraph that I have about my birth mother, it says she gave birth alone. And that always stood out to me.
Oh, my God.
You're so strong.
I know that someday I would like to have my own children. And I also think that it will be a very overwhelming and very different experience. And I think, will I be able to relate to my mom?
Come on, baby girl, drop.
Definitely she'll be so great for just like advice and mothering advice, but what about, you know, all the pregnancy advice that you get from your mom, or the story that she tells you about your birth and how that may or may not be similar to your own? And that will be absent, and for her it's something she never had. So is this a tender subject? Is this a awkward subject? Or is it something that we can just kind of embrace full force and just say, we have no idea what this is all about, but this is a new element to our relationship. Let's see what happens.
You have so much power. This is all you. You just like that. Good.
Change
your chest.
Hello.
There,
hi little one. Baby. Hi, baby girl. Hello.
So close.
She's
right there.
Come on,
mama. You got it.
Good. Yeah, she's coming. She's coming. You push.
I initiated a search, and the woman that they contacted, she said, no, I never gave a child for adoption. Don't ever call back again. I don't want to talk to you anymore.
Hi, welcome to the world.
And there was no even positive confirmation that that was her. It was just kind of this dead end lead.
Congratulations.
Now
me cry.
Oh my gosh. Welcome to the world, little one.
Oh my god.
As the part of the search, I did write a letter as well. It took me a while to figure out what I wanted to say.
What you
want to know? We're going to listen to the baby's heartbeat, okay?
In the end, I just wrote something pretty short. I told her why I wanted to be a midwife was related to her story.
Oh. Can you give us a cry?
Hi, Mama.
Can you get a bit mad a bit?
Yes,
want to rub her back a little bit? Kind of stimulate her a little?
There we go.
Yeah.
Give us a little more.
And then I just concluded with, please know you'll be warmly welcomed at any time.
A lot of adoptees I know have done search and have been given false information or have been told that there isn't any documentation of biological family, or after searching, it's discovered that their biological family doesn't wish to reunite with them. And my story is very different.
So this is Skylar Swenson. She produced the piece about the birth assistant. And like Lydia, Skylar was adopted from Korea by an American family. Our friend, producer Ann Noyes Sani, sat down with Skylar for this interview.
When I was about 24, I bought a one-way ticket from New York City to Seoul and figured I'd try to live there and just learn more about my relationship with the country and learn more about where I came from.
Skylar stayed in Seoul for a year and a half, and she was working and making friends and just learning about the place where she was born. But she struggled to fit in.
The thing that really was a dead giveaway of me not being from Korea while I was over there was just my sense of fashion and, you know, eating ability and, like, in general, just kind of, like, being independent. I think, like, mainstream Korean culture, by the time you're, like, in your mid-20s, expects that you're, like, with a husband, gonna have kids. You know, the housewife narrative of, like, the 1950s in America is very much alive in, like, Korean culture. I just felt like I always had to be in heels and a dress, which is, like, not who I am. But, like, it was, I kind of gave into it a little bit as a, like, more from, like, a curiosity of, like, how I would be empowered as a woman in Korea was, like, through adhering to, like, some of these standards.
Meeting her birth parents was part of Skylar's search for herself when she was in Korea. And finding them was actually the easy part because her adoption agency kept better records than Lydia's. But what came next was harder for Skylar.
I had the most butterflies about just seeing people that looked like me. And then when they walked in the door, it wasn't like, oh my God, there's me. It wasn't, I guess I wasn't sure what I was expecting, but there wasn't, like, such a striking resemblance that it was like, oh, these are clearly my parents.
Was it ever, like, awkward in any way, sort of being?
Yeah. Lots of silence, as you can imagine, the language barrier and just the emotional intensity of it all often left us, you know, without words. But I tried to be comfortable and, like, sit in that silence, and I hope that they were too. I mean, there wasn't much of an alternative, but you know, we tried to kind of pantomime and, like, write things and yeah, just kind of physically be around one another.
When she was growing up, Skylar never really wondered why her parents placed her for adoption. She had been told that they couldn't afford to care for her, and she accepted that. But when she met them...
Literally the first thing that my father said to me was, in Korean, "I'm sure you're wondering why we placed you for adoption, and it's because when you were born, we couldn't afford other children, and also you were born female, not male." Yeah, which was something I had not known. So... I'm still kind of like sitting with that additional information and not knowing what, how to process that or how I feel about it. But I also like am who I am today because of everything that's happened. So I don't like feel anger or resentment or shame in that decision that was made for me based on sex, I guess, at birth. I think I was more just like, approaching this reunion with the hope that they would know that that decision was one that resulted in me being a healthy, like, adult who had, like, the life that I would assume maybe they had wanted for me. I mean, who knows? There's a lot kind of, like, loaded in that assumption of, like, a better life in America, which is, yeah, hard to process now as an adult, as I've become more aware of like systems of like colonization and you know, the loss of being raised in America with white parents, of like a sense of self. And I think, yeah, going back to Korea was a big part of figuring that out.
I'm jumping in to remind you that you are listening to Making Contact. If you like today's show and want more information, or if you'd like to leave us a comment, visit us at our new website, focmedia.org. There you can access today's show and all of our prior episodes. Okay, now back to the show.
Welcome back to the show. I'm Amy Gastel, and this is Making Contact. Several years ago, I invited my friend Alex Lewis to come over for a visit. And when he walked into my apartment, he immediately wanted to hold my brand new baby. And he seemed so comfortable. I could tell that he had had experience with newborns. And so we got to talking. And it turns out his experience with infants starts with his own birth story. Like Skylar and Lydia, Alex was adopted from Korea. And as an adult, he tried to learn about his birth mother. But his adoption agency didn't have great records.
There's so little information about my birth mother. We know her first name. We know that she was, I believe she was 20 or 21 years old when I was born, and she was a university student. And the only hobby that's listed in the file is bowling. Apparently she liked bowling. And the only two sentences besides that in the description are, the mother met the father on the way home from work one day. She never knew his name. And so that's it. That's it.
Alex hasn't been able to find his birth mother yet, but he still visits Korea occasionally for similar reasons as Skylar, right? He goes to learn about himself and the place that he was born. And when he goes there, he visits an organization that houses young, unmarried, pregnant people and the babies that they place for adoption.
And this place is called IWA, the IWA Baby Center. And another name, for the English name is like Home for Young Moms. Because in Korea, or single mom, being like a single mom is like the worst thing you could be, and you're shunned from society. That's changing, but not that quickly.
Stigma against single moms is part of the reason that over six decades, starting after the Korean War in the 1950s, at least 200,000 Korean children were adopted outside of the country, and most of them ended up in the U.S. It was the largest adoption exodus from one country in the history of the world, and it wasn't an accident. After the war, a special law created a legal framework for adoption, and agencies were set up to fast-track adoptions out of the country. These agencies actually made quite a bit of money on the adoptions, and now, decades later, there are reports of widespread adoption fraud stemming from these agencies. At the same time, in the U.S., abortion was legal, birth control was more accessible than ever, and single women in the U.S. were keeping their children at greater rates than those in Korea. All of this led to a decrease in U.S. domestic-born infants available for adoption, something conservatives continue to point out as a problem here and a rationale for limiting abortion and birth control in the U.S. In his opinion, Reversing Roe v. Wade, Justice Samuel Alito wrote a footnote referencing a CDC report about the high demand for adoptable infants in the U.S., juxtaposed with the virtually non-existent, quote, domestic supply of infants. Alex never found his birth mother, but he found the Iwa Baby Center, this place that houses pregnant people and babies. And to get back to the story, that's where he learned to hold infants. That's why he was so comfortable holding my baby.
They put me in the room with like the newest babies and just like sat me down on the ground, put like towel basically on me, like over my arm, and just like handed me a baby and like a bottle. And I kind of just sat there. This is a lot of what I did though, was I would sit there for hours and they'd like change out babies who I was holding and feeding.
In 2011, Korea passed the Special Adoption Act in the hopes that it would increase domestic adoptions and decrease international adoptions. It did that. But it also resulted in more abandoned children. Because the underlying problem of stigma had not been resolved, the law required unwed mothers to document the adoption. Some women didn't want their adoptions formally documented by the government. And here in the U.S., the stigma against single moms persists among the Korean diaspora. Our friend Ann Noy Sani produced this next story, which was recorded at a church in Queens, New York.
It's not just like a bad thing happened. I became more independent, and then I have some kind of sense of notion how to survive in here. And then I'm teaching my daughter, I mean, as a young girl in big city, how she survive in here. So I think it's like also a good thing for my daughter, and then to teach her like how to stand by herself and then being independent. Yeah, it's a good opportunity to teach her like that way.
This is Sina. She's originally from Korea, but she lives in Queens now, and she's raising her teenage daughter on her own. Sina is actually part of this support group for single moms in New York, and it's called the Single Parent Alliance of Koreans. And basically, it's a group of single moms with their kids. They get together and they celebrate holidays together, kind of like a big extended family. And basically, it's just a place where the women can kind of lean on each other for support and advice and friendship.
That sounds brilliant. That is absolutely brilliant. I get that, like, being in community with people who understand you and go through a struggle that's, like, so similar to yours, that can be really important in somebody's life. It can really, like, buoy you. Did Sina and these moms talk about like their specific or unique challenges, especially as Korean single mothers?
Yeah, totally. Because, I mean, keep in mind, one, they are supporting their kids alone in New York, which is just a really, really hard, expensive place to live, period. And then, you know, they're all immigrants. And for most of them, there's, you know, sort of an issue of learning English. Getting kind of like professional qualifications that are sort of valid here. And then just being so, so far away from their family. Like, I think all of them still had most of their family in Korea. So I talked to another woman who is also in the group. Her name is Chung Suk. And she told me that it was so hard for her after her husband passed away and when she was raising her son on her own that she almost gave her son up for adoption.
And when you were thinking about what that would mean for you to be a mom, raising your son alone, like what were your initial thoughts?
Once I thought about, you know, give up my son, because
it's okay.
Yeah, at the time I really survived by myself. Yeah, and then emotionally, financially, I really, you know, I wanted to give up myself. So that's why, yeah, I don't know how to say. It's really described difficult.
I'm sorry, I don't mean to ask such
no, I'm okay.
Hard questions. I'm sorry.
That's just shameful. Like, in our community, that's even something she had to consider.
Yeah, so there's that aspect of it, which is literally, like, making ends meet. But the women that I talked to in this group, they also said that it's really hard for them because they feel kind of excluded by people in the Korean community here. And then also their families back home in Korea aren't all that supportive of their decision to raise their kids alone. So here's the group's founder. Her name is Mimi Huang.
Korea is male-dominant society. You know, practically single moms are shunned from society and her own family. In terms of single mom conveys a negative connotation in Korea. They face to, you know, discrimination and also kids is target as well. Yeah, because, you know, they children's of single moms, they are easily teased by other kids.
Is it the same here? Like, is it different? Like, if you are in the Korean community here in New York, do people have the same kinds of attitudes? Or is it a little bit different?
It's not much different, you know.
So people aren't sympathetic to single moms, even here in New York.
Oh, but we don't want to sympathetic. we need empathy, right? We are not pathetic, you know.
So when these moms immigrated from Korea, it sounds like the shunning kind of stayed with them here.
Exactly. But Mimi actually said that she thinks, you know, even though there were certain things that were harder here, she thinks it's maybe a little bit easier to be a single mom here in New York than in Korea.
Okay. Did the other women in the group weigh in on that? Like, did they feel that way?
Yeah, I was curious. I mean, that was one of the main things I wanted to ask them, and it was a little tricky for them because most of them hadn't lived in Korea in a good decade or more. But I asked them about that, and here's what they said. First, you're going to hear Chung Suk, and then you're going to hear Sina, who's the woman from the very beginning.
In Korean culture, if who has the baby without husband, they assume her life is already ruined or, you know, embarrassing. In here, the Korean people, they really same like in Korea. Still, they still think the same, but I don't care. Yeah, I don't care whatever they say, whatever they think, yeah.
Now things change a little bit, but not very dramatically, I believe. Yeah, it's like it's when I say mention it to my parents, maybe I can be back with my daughter. They are really hesitating to answer. Yes, you can be back with your daughter. No, yeah, they are really really hesitating.
But like even for a visit.
It's my daughter looks a little bit different than like a regular Korean. It's like she's half Korean, so they don't wanna say that. They don't wanna see other people how they look. Yeah, it's they really aware what other people think. Yeah, so I really think yeah, it's sad, but it's I have to accept it.
You know, I'm really impressed by the way these women, you know, kind of banded together and figured out what their needs were when almost everybody in their world is telling them that they're doing it wrong.
Yeah, I mean, their group is such a great model. Like, these women really get it. Like, you know, you're not alone. You're not the only person dealing with this.
I mean, I meet other, like, a single mom, and then from their story, I encourage, okay, I cannot be naive. They survive. I have to do more. I have to push myself.
this group is only, I know this one group in here for Korean single mother. Just there is no other group like us.
We all go together, cheering up each other and comfort each other. Why? Because every day we're living very difficult. That's why we know everybody, each other problem. So we're getting together. We have to create some new energy.
I'm Amy Gastelum. Thanks for listening to Making Contact. As we were finishing up production on today's episode, a feminist movement from South Korea began to gain traction here in the United States. It was a response to the presidential election. It's called 4B. The B stands for the Korean word meaning not. Essentially, women are refusing to participate in four components of patriarchy: marriage, childbearing, dating, and sex with men. This is Korea's latest export. Whatever it takes, y'all. A huge thank you today to producers Skylar Swinson and Anne Noyce Sani. Go to our website, focmedia.org, for more information about today's show. Until next week.